Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Clicking Balls. This is week one of the finals. Week one of the finals, yep. All wrapped up. My name is Heath, and the first question I ask every week is your highlight of the week. So, Brenton, you got a highlight of the week past?
It's been a few weeks, I'm assuming, since we've had highlights from some mixed martial arts. UFC event on the weekend, it was Darren Till, who's a Manchester or Liverpool fella, taking on Tyron Woodley for the 155-pound belt.
You say don't mix those two up. They get offended.
No, but, I mean, I like offending English, so, yeah. That Mank, Darren Till.
I guess I thought you were going to say Till and Woodley. Get them two mixed up. I'm like, no, I can tell them apart.
It's like this has had lots of interesting moments in this card. Number one, two instances of knee bar from back mount, which is kind of crazy. One just destroyed this guy's knee, blew it out sideways. The other one, he almost got into a banana split. This Russian fella, who I'll just call him MAGA because he's MAGA Manovidov, something like that. Also, some devastating knockouts. A young fella coming up in the 155-pound division as well got a sidekick knockout that just destroyed this fella. And also, a one-punch knockout in the female's 115-pound division. Jessica Andrade knocked out Karolina Kowalkiewicz, or however you pronounce her last name.
Wow.
Who's a Muay Thai fighter, I believe, by a pedigree. But
she's legit.
And she actually took the punches pretty well and gave a few herself. But I was just this one she didn't see, a big, nice right hook that, just cleaned her out. But one of the other biggest performances I was most impressed with was in the same division. You had Tatiana Suarez, who was the winner of Ultimate Fighter, taking on the original winner of that division's Ultimate Fighter and former champion, Carla Esparza, and just dominated her. Like, it was an amazing performance. And when
it
you
was
look at.
Brutish.
Yeah, and just stand up was enough to keep distance, but she's so rangy and so quick to close in the distance that she just mauled Esparza, who is a wrestler. That was most impressive. But the other thing, after the main event finishes, they go backstage, and Tyrone absolutely destroyed Darren Till. It wasn't close, just put a clinic on him.
Yeah.
And Tyrone's mum comes up and has a few words to Darren Till, giving like, it was a good fight, all the best. And I thought, that's just sweet. You know what I mean?
Lovely.
Your son goes out there, they try to knock each other's head off. And I don't know if she can understand what Darren said back to her, but I thought that's such a classy aspect of Tyrone Woodley, who himself has shown that he's all class. I remember when he was fighting, I'm pretty sure it was Gastelum. And of course, Gastelum didn't make weight. Which is just standard. I think it was a heavyweight. And so Tyrone said that he was going to take it on himself to return the 30% fight purse that he should have got back to Gastelum, because he's like, I know that it's very hard when you're going to a fight camp and it's hard to make ends meet, and so that makes a big difference to someone who's not, at the top of the contender hierarchy. And so, went and returned the 30% that he was rightfully due.
It's a top move, and obviously you've got to be in a position where you can make those kind of calls, but he's not pulling in, McGregor money.
Yeah, exactly. And this was like a fair few fights for his champion as well. So, I just found a very interesting card of one that didn't have a whole lot of expectations going into it, but certainly delivered.
I did like on the Carla Esparza fight, where I think Fight Metric had it 81 significant strikes to zero.
Yep.
Yet that's one judge had a 10-8 in the first round.
Yep.
Carla.
Yep. To Carla.
Clearly a mistake, I think.
No
bias, just mistakes.
And I don't know how you can make that mistake, especially if there was such a one-sided fight and there's only one person to be looking at in that fight.
I got to say, there's only, two names you got to remember, and they're wearing different clothes, but anyway.
Yeah.
Josh, you got a highlight of the week past?
If I say the name Naomi Osaka, what do you think of?
Well, I know who she is.
What about you? If I said her name, what would you associate her with?
Waifus.
The biggest upset in... Well, fuck it. I'm going to go full hyperbole. Biggest upset in professional sport of the week.
Well, you've gone big, gone for the big swing, and then ended up taking a cheeky single.
It was a bunt. She beat Serena Williams in the US Open, which she's the best female tennis player of all time, and makes an argument for the best tennis player of all time. And so to be beaten by a 20-year-old up-and-comer is phenomenal for Osaka.
I think Japan's first Open winner.
Yeah, I'd say tennis. So. Doesn't ring a bell for it. I know there was a bloke running around a while back, but...
Yeah, I've got a feeling you're probably thinking of Michael Chang, who was American.
Chinese-American.
Yeah. But anyway.
It's the biggest event in her career by far, and it's such an upset and such a massive thing. But it's been overshadowed because Serena Williams got coached and got a warning for that, and then got pissed off because she was losing, smashed a racket, and got a point deduction, and then... called the umpire all sorts of names under the sun and got a game penalty.
Yeah.
Yelled at him for a good... it looked like three quarters of an hour.
Well, I mean, the problem is she obviously spends so much time around Reddit that it starts to bleed into real life.
Well, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Is it Know Nothing as a husband?
Yeah, and married the founder of Reddit, yeah. I can't believe that it became, like, an issue about sexism and that kind of stuff. I'm like, one, okay... The penalty for coaching? Yeah, coach said, yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of the thing. She's like, you lost that. I never coached. And the coach is like, I kind of did.
Yeah.
So maybe she didn't know he was.
And by all accounts, she couldn't even see anyway.
Yeah.
But he did do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And he admitted to it. And his defense was, everyone does it.
And smashed the racket. I mean, yeah, you did that.
Yep.
Definitely, because we saw it. It was. I thought, you've got nothing to base on here. You're like, you fucking did it.
Yeah.
And the
argument, what's the fucking evidence for it?
The argument that, well, they never penalise for that, for the coaching. We're like, well, that's all the other umpires' faults then, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
This one's got it right.
Sure.
Yeah. We're going off of the one guy that's doing his job.
Well, it's so many things. It's like when you get caught speeding. Like, everyone else is speeding. Doesn't matter. You're the one that got caught.
You got caught, champ.
So, look, I don't think it makes her any less of a champion, but she's wrong here.
Yeah.
And every sport, no demand. How often will you... challenge an umpire, even if they're fucking wrong, and they'll go, top call, mate.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to change that.
I fucked that one up. I'm gonna draw back on it. I have never seen any sport of any level, to be honest, where an umpire's acknowledged their fault and reversed their decision.
Yeah, then and there.
Yeah, exactly. On that moment. There's been plenty of no contests after fights when they've gone, no, or the ref was fucked up.
Yeah. I can even remember way back in, like, UFC... I don't know, 30 or something. It was Sakuraba versus Marcus Conan Silveira.
Yep.
Do you remember this one?
No.
Sakuraba dove for a knee bar and Big John called it. He thought he got knocked out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do remember that one now.
And they went, no, I'm shooting for a double leg, mate.
Yeah.
They went, oh, you're right. Fuck that one up. You know what? See us in an hour, mate. We'll come back. We'll do it again.
Yep.
They fought again. The same night. Can't do that these days. But anyway, yeah, I can't say any other thing. She was clearly in the wrong. And poor old Naomi Osaka gets, you know, it's a bit of Taylor Swift and who was the dickhead who jumped on stage?
Is it Kanye?
Yeah.
Kanye jumped on stage, yeah.
It's a bit like that. But anyway.
But the worst thing, like the US Open crowd's been shitty for the whole thing. Like, firstly, Aussie stalwart Milman upsets Roger Federer, which is... If the Serena Williams didn't happen, that's the biggest upset in professional sport of the week.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's been pipped by a 20-year-old Japanese chick. Bad luck, champ.
Yeah.
But that made the crowd boo dramatically because they turn up, they want to see Roger Federer play Djokovic.
Exactly. Of course they do.
And that's fine.
He won.
All
right, we'll get into the footy. We've got four games to go through, and it is funny, like, I love finals time, regardless of if my team's playing or not.
Yep.
Because ordinary games become exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like we had three ordinary games over the weekend, and they were very, very watchable still. Well, maybe not one. But anyway, we'll get into that. First off, on Thursday night, the Tigers and the Hawks. I said before the game, you know, that Hawthorn needed three things to go their way in order to win this. They needed one to play at their absolute best. Two, they needed to be dry. And three, they needed a bit of luck.
So none for three.
Oh for three. Yep. They went. I thought that they played all right for the first 40-odd minutes. They just didn't convert. But once the Tiger machine got going, they're just too fit.
Yeah, well, there were some shocking misses by the Hawks, which were sort of pivotal to keep that momentum going and keep the pressure on the Tigers, especially the scored pressure going into the first. But like you said, it was just a matter of fitness, and that's sort of been the key to the Tigers is their third quarters. And that seems to be where the pressure on them sort of became less and less, and they found more space and found their groove, especially in what was a slick game. It wasn't like raining like heavy or anything.
I think the Tigers at the Hawks engine room wasn't so bad. I mean, look at Mitchell, O'Meara and Shields. They did all right.
They did brilliant.
They had good games, yeah.
But the problem was that there was no one around them who was able to pick the ball up off the ground for a start and run with the ball.
Well, and there was silly mistakes all around the place. I mean, there were 450 uncontested marks that got dropped.
Yeah.
You mentioned like Burgoyne missing from the top of the goal square, and then Luke Bruce missing from the top of the goal square. I mean, fuck me.
Crazy.
If it wasn't for Geelong, this would be the biggest upset in professional sports of that 24-hour period.
And then in the back line, absolute refusal to mark the ball.
Yeah, the back line was embarrassing at times, especially us them just not struggle to get it out, but struggle to even attempt to get it out.
Yeah, it was just, well, mate, we're here to punch.
Yeah.
It was a clear directive. And you're like, okay, that is good for the majority of the time.
Yeah, but when you're alone, you're double punching it.
Yeah, there are times you go, maybe. You know what, I might have a crack at this one. Hmm. But I do think there were just some people that were just a little bit overawed by the whole situation. Warple and Morrison, I thought they played well below their best, but
you've
got to keep them in the side because there's no way to get rid of final jitters but play finals.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah. And it was just all around there from the Tigers. Dusty Starred on the night, made it his, kicked what could have been goal of the year if it wasn't for the finals.
It's not a bad effort. When two Hawthorn players are missing from the top of the goal square and he's dominant from the boundary line 40 out and never looked in doubt.
It seems he's licking his lips when he gets the ball too. He knows he's slotting this one.
And what was amazing was I thought he was being well held for a lot of it. I mean, he got caught holding the ball like three or four times.
Yeah, I thought he was being held well, but he just sort of found a way to outmaneuver or also had a lot of help from teammates as well, getting him into that space.
And fitness. Like, you can't do that for four quarters, and he showed it.
Yep. And on the other side of things, I mean, the ball wasn't down in the back line too much, but I thought Grimes did enough to show that he's going to be able to take on big roles when it comes into tall forward lines when they come in there. He finds a way just to position himself very well, especially when the ball is in contention. He's not always committed to either rebounding or defending. He's putting himself in a position where even if they get a quick ball out, he's going to be somewhere in the mix. It's not going to be easy marks going forward, which was essential in these sorts of games where it's going to be a running game.
I do feel Hawthorn, I don't think, played that bad.
No.
But Richmond, they played good, but they kicked 13-17.
Yeah.
They could have easily, they should have had that opposite.
Yeah, that they had a lot of the ball up forward. I mean, but it was a wet night and they still scored 95 points.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. Hawthorn were only just a little bit off their game, but that's enough.
And also, Richmond were insatiable with that. They just had no end of hassle. So, I'm pretty sure they're on the juice, and they're going to get DQ'd.
Well, even, I think Hawthorn out-tackled them.
They did, actually,
And in the first quarter, it was a Hawthorn game
in
the first quarter, but they just, they ended up with up by 1 point, and the Tigers got two rebound goals, and that'll do it for you. I thought, there was some good out of the Hawthorn side as well. Like you said, O'Meara, Mitchell, and Chips Frawley kept Jack Riewoldt, the Coleman medalist goalist.
Yep.
And I thought Jack Riewoldt was actually very poor. He went back to his old ways of playing for free kicks.
He's a selfish player.
Yeah, I thought so too.
and playing for ones that were like not even close.
No, yeah. And it has been a sort of a feature of his game this year where he was doing a little bit, but that was when he wasn't playing good. In the last 6 weeks or so, he's actually stopped that and been sort of the person that doesn't have to be kicking the goals. He can come out past 50 and sort of create that contest so that young kids can get there and lock it in.
But, it's hard to be too critical of the bloke when they've just won by,
That's it,
canter.
If he's the one bad player on the night for Tigers, they're doing all right.
If he's their worst, then they're happy. But you look at the stats and more disposals to Hawthorn. They had efficiency inside 50. They were 51 to 41. But in a wet night, you're going to drop that efficiency.
But I mean, the efficiency inside 50 is a little bit misleading too, because I think the Tigers had double the amount of inside 50s to begin with.
Yeah,
It was 60-odd to 30-odd, something like that.
Yeah, but also, you know, tackles in forward 50, they owned that one. Stoppage clearances, head outs, even centre clearances, they split. Yeah.
I think we even won free kicks too.
By one. Yeah, Richmond won by one. So, stats-wise, Hawthorn were all right. So you can't say that they weren't in the game, but Richmond were just relentless in their pressure. Like, they ran smart, too. You get guys running not side by side, which you see far too fucking often, but that gap enough and gap forward enough that they could help each other out, get the 1-2s, and keep fucking going.
Well, I mean, Hawthorn still won two quarters. That's the silly thing. I mean, the queue was in the rack well into the fourth.
But I thought one of the most underrated performances was Segler and McAvoy holding Grigg to zero hitouts. I mean, right there, you're on a winning path.
That's it. That's what you want to do. I thought we were robbed because, you know, Showmakers is a laid out. You know, that really
Hurts. I didn't know he was an in.
Well, I think he's played seven games this year and he's 7-0. So it's a bit of an omen. But anyway, it is funny that when we were, I think on the podcast last week, I said, there's a laid out coming.
Yep.
I picked the wrong player to come in, though. I didn't think Daniel Howe was going to come in.
But, yeah.
They were going to take a tall out. I didn't know that Showmakers was under an injury cloud. And Howe played well. He had, like, there was one where Dusty went the fender off and he walked straight through it. I didn't know he had that in him. And even Dusty looked like, what the fuck's he doing for that for?
This is my moment. Yeah. Jesus.
But anyway, he obviously bounced back.
So young Dizzy Rioli, he seems like he's built for finals.
He's a Rioli.
Yeah, exactly.
Just does what Rioli's do.
That's it. Doesn't need plenty of the ball, just needs the ball.
I did like how Clarkson said, he gave Cyril a cheeky call and said, do you want to wander on down? But, you know, in fairness, he wants to stay in the NT, and I'm sure Clarkson's sending fertile women up his way, trying to get some father sons and father daughters coming through the doorframe.
Yeah, exactly.
And fair play, you know, on genetics alone, the Riolis don't do too bad.
Exactly. The other disappointment for me is Luke Bruce. Again, he was very quiet. He got a goal late in the game when the heat was off only. Mm. But he had three tackles in the first quarter and then none for the rest of the game. He needs five more for the 50-goal, 100 season. And I'm like, God, you're averaging four tackles a game and you can't get four tackles in the last month.
Well, especially with the game where you didn't have the ball very much. Tackles should be, you know, pretty up there.
You'd think so.
What'd you make of Stratton's game?
Brilliant. He had goal-saving tackles two or three times. I think it was Caddy was running into an open goal, and he caught him.
Well, he had 11 touches, but eight of those contested possessions, which to me is, for a bloke, that immobility, if you want to go with that, well, it was pretty good.
He did spend the last quarter and a half off, you know, injured.
Yeah.
And he's obviously not playing next week, which is a devastating blow, but... Yeah, he was...
They've only credited him with one tackle. I'm sure I saw him take more than one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely more than one.
Champion like data, said, what are you fucking playing at?
There was definitely one that was a goal-saving tackle even. So, yeah, I think they fucked up there. But anyway, yeah, he was brilliant until, you know, Richmond, once they got on top in the third, and then he went off, and you're like, well, there's no chance. Not that you thought there was... I thought there was a chance anyway, but what glimmer of hope was there went out with him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's obvious that Caddy's going to make himself the arsehole of the finals. He's got no
problem with stirring
people up.
Oh, well, he did his best. He set the bar.
Yep.
Somebody else, which we will get to, stepped over it. But
Bruce Rhee.
He did go for the no-arm triangle.
Yeah, from the back. Stage. And I mean, if we hadn't done anything on the weekend, he should have hooked the leg and gone for the knee bar. It was the move of the round.
But what I... find weird was this was when Richmond were already on top.
Yeah,
mate, do it in the first quarter with the heat time.
Yep, and then gives everyone else a spray. I don't know. It's been an interesting one from Caddy, but he came out and apologised sincerely on Instagram.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not big on it. He copped his fines for what he did, but he apologised for calling someone a spastic.
Spastic, yeah, but then he called someone a fucking cunt too, but that's all right.
That's traditional.
Great. Yep. His only crime, really, was getting caught on the umpire's mic.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's how it goes. But anyway.
Well, it's a bit uncreative, let's be honest. I mean, spastic. I mean,
yeah.
He's a footballer.
Who was he calling a spastic?
Daniel Howell, I think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, yeah, he didn't deserve that, to be honest. He's quite all right. Exactly. But there were plenty of spastics other than the Hawthorn team that night, but Howe wasn't one of them.
Yeah, but you're not going to go up and call Burgoyne names after he's just missed one from the top of the goal score, are you? You're going to go, hey, nah, you're right.
Yeah.
I can't say nothing.
It's hard to dislike that, lad. So what, how many games are you up to now?
Oh, that was number 200 for Hawthorn. So I think he's up to about 360.
Yeah, yeah. I think with Burgoyne, you're really like the parent mode where you just want them to feel really disappointed in themselves. Like, you just let down lots of kids, you know. Like, they're looking up to you.
He's playing one more year too, which is always good.
Good. I've seen on some of the Nuffy pages, they're talking, oh, mate, he could make 400. I'm like, hang on. Let's hold back on that because that's another... What, 3 to 4 seasons?
Yeah.
Depending on finals?
Let's go one at a time.
Once you get over 30, you're kind of on two-year deals. And that's about what you expect.
And he's 36.
Yeah. Once you start heading north of 35, it's your one rolled ankle away from being done. And he's spectacular career and, by all accounts, an absolute top bloke. I want to see him go around. I don't want to see him hit 4-3-2, but... I'd like to see him get 400.
Yeah, 357 he's up to. I think 400 might be a bridge too far for him.
I'd say so, but it just shows how hard it is to get to 400. I mean, only four players have done it. But, you know, if he's the fifth, I can live with that.
Well, the thing is, you don't... If you're a Hawks supporter, I don't see that you'd want him to be able to play 400 because it means he's really struggling to get someone else there and take over that role.
Well, that's kind of the argument with Mitchell as well. Like, he had a good game and did a lot of good stuff, and his stats are great, but... If he's doing all that, where the fuck's everyone else?
Oh, he's smashing it in the clearances early, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought Jager was great. Burton. I saw somebody say Burton made a few mistakes. I thought he was great for his... Well, it was his second final, but he only played 2 minutes in the first one. So I thought he was great, too. But, yeah, I thought there was a lot of positives. But end of the day, Tigers by, what, 5 goals? Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
On to Friday night then, the D's and the Cats. And this was a fascinating game.
I was at the match and it seemed like there was 70,000 Melbourne supporters and about 20,000 Geelong supporters, which is, to be honest, about the opposite of what I expected.
Well, we saw the photos of the lineup of MCC, which is probably the craziest we've seen all year, and there's been some big lineups.
I don't get MCC membership.
Oh, fuck that. I wouldn't want one.
There's two releases. You can get the release where you buy your seat and you sit down and whatever for, I don't know, I think it's a couple of bucks, essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they then release the walk-up tickets, and you've got to line up and whatnot. And honestly, if you miss out on those tickets, I have no idea what happens.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Fuck off, I think.
Do you then turn up and go, oh, yeah, lads, allocation exhausted? You're like, fucking what, mate? I have to go back to the Range Rover?
Do they, dude? It's almost worth, I've told this story before, but about the Australian Idol tryout to Adelaide International Hotel and people line up for days before that. So we just went across the road and threw water bombs at them and no one's going to come out. I feel like this is really open to abusing the shit out of some Melbourne supporters. Get some back on the bourgeoisie society.
Throw some generic home brand cheese at them.
Yeah, that's what we do. Some slices too. The slices, that real crap
Kraft
stuff.
Singles.
Yeah.
Yeah, throw it. And keep the plastic on.
Yeah, that's it. Get a bit of a slicing action happening there.
I get the foam cheese, like the in the can.
Oh, yeah.
Spray cheese.
That's the ticket right there.
No, you can't begrudge them enjoying their moment in the sun.
Yeah, and all the best to them. You saw all the graffiti pop up around the place.
How quick was that?
Straight away, yeah.
Oh, with Lush Sucks had...
Lush Sucks had a busy weekend, I'll tell you
what. He got onto
it. Jesus Christ.
And friend of the podcast, Ricky Walker from Sports Berserk. He's working on a mural at the moment.
Yep.
I asked how long he'd been working on this. He said, all my life. And by all accounts, it might cover the Rialto, top to bottom. So he's pretty keen. He's got a shout out to him. He's got a exhibition on at the moment, Free for Footy or something, at the Docklands. So, rock on down. There's him and a whole bunch of other cartoonists.
Is it Half?
Yeah, Half Time.
Half Time.
Couple of other blokes, but they'll turn up and it's free, so fuck it.
Melbourne, ferocious out the gate. Kicked 5 goals to none in the first quarter. And as a Hawthorn supporter, still smarming from the night before, I loved it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It was an amazing start by Melbourne. And I didn't expect them to come out of the gates fired up. Did not expect them to be this fired up.
I think Simon Goodwin was very cruel putting Jack Viney on the bench.
Yeah,
to start the game.
I really, really like Jack Thiney. He's one of the players I love to watch, and he had a belter.
Yeah, he
started on the bench, but I think that was one of those ones where you want your hungry player even hungrier. Yeah. He was a starving fucking pit bull.
He did well, not to get reported, because I thought there's every chance he's going to go out there and do something wrong.
But I think he had like 6 tackles in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was something around there. But it was just all in for the D's in that first quarter and a half. And I've got an opinion that might not be the most popular, but I thought Melbourne were absolutely fantastic for a quarter and a half, quarter and three-fourths. But then I felt like they had a real opportunity to just absolutely give Geelong a spanking.
Yep.
Because Geelong were fucking terrible.
Yep.
This is after we've just given them the best eighth team finish ever in the history of AFL.
They looked awful.
They got worse and worse as the game went on. And I feel like Melbourne, they should have done so much more in that last half, or even the second quarter,
not goal six they kicked.
Yeah.
And obviously they had plenty of opportunities there. But right at the end of the second quarter, before half time, they looked cooked.
Yeah.
I thought Melbourne have shot their load here.
Well, that's, I thought too. And that's something that, people got really, really excited about Melbourne and drew, every right to do that, but they still, I feel like, had a few holes in their game, especially with longevity and how able to have that fast-paced, high-pressure game for all 4 quarters.
Yep.
That's something that if I was a Melbourne coach or player or assistant, you'd be concerned about, something you'd really want to fix up. And they don't get the luxury of a week break.
Well, I think, we called it last week. They have that, that nervousness in their, still in their DNA.
Yeah.
And they showed it a couple of times against Geelong during the year where they lost from very winnable situations.
Yep.
It looked like they were going down that path again, especially in the second and third quarter where they had a wealth of opportunities. You thought, mate, you've blown your chances here.
Yeah.
But I think they're better off for it now because they've got it out of their system.
For sure.
Unscathed. And a lot of that, Geelong had a chance to come back because, like I said, they look cooked.
Yeah.
And then one of the biggest boneheaded plays I've ever seen.
Oh, dear God.
From the Geelong captain.
And look, the thing is, Selwood was getting a touch-up all day. Like, I think he had about 6 free kicks in the first quarter or something.
He had 6 in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. So, and look, I couldn't tell from where I was sitting, but I reckon they probably deserved because Melbourne went the knuckle. Yeah. And that's the finals.
They went hard.
Yeah, and that's the way you have to play if you're going to win finals. So Selwood would have been frustrated. But when you're running off to the bench, you don't need to interact with any other fucking player.
No. You just go straight to the bench.
And you got a shot at goal.
Tommy Hawkins was kicking well.
Yeah, exactly.
And then to not just, push and shove, whatnot, they'll let that go. But to headlock a bloke and throw him to the ground. You can argue he deserved whatever. It doesn't matter.
No.
And it's dumb.
Yeah. And in that one interaction, Selwood initiated. It wasn't like he was retaliating and got caught.
Yep.
He initiated.
And you think that coming off from the bench there, you maybe don't think about it, but he continued in that attitude the entire game.
Yeah.
I remember I think he changed for Selwood, for Ablett. Ablett came on and was like, the fuck are you doing?
Ablett gave him a big spray.
And deservedly.
Yeah. And to be honest, I thought Ablett played played a very good game. He wasn't successful a lot of the time. I feel like there was a game that, for me, it looked like he's just lost a step but hasn't realised it yet, as he hasn't been able to adjust how he plays.
Well, I saw him get about 4 tackles broken, as in he tried to tackle and they were broken.
Yeah.
And I think he got caught holding the ball twice.
Well, it is late in his career to start tackling.
Yeah, this is true.
But hasn't really done it before.
But I think that, who am I? I'm not an AFL coach or anything, but I'm going to say Ablett probably don't put him in the midfield as a first rotation. Well, put him in the forward pocket. He's a fucking fantastic player still. He's a human, and he's come back to the pack a bit with age, but his ability to find the ball and use the ball is still in probably top 10.
Well, that's it. They've always said, you know, maybe at the end of his career he might go down forward and become a goal sneak.
It's something
that actually Geelong needs.
Yep, like, exactly.
Put him in a pocket.
Yeah, but I feel like he was obviously in his head, and I'll use this example, and it's not a great example because I'm comparing myself to fucking Gary Ablett.
Why not?
But when I was younger, I played a lot of basketball, and, you know, it was all right, pretty decent. But then I stopped playing for, you know, 4 years. I remember going to the court one time, and I went to shoot a free throw.
Yep.
And just same routine in my head, done this a million times. My head says my body can do this, no problems. Yeah.
About 3 foot short?
Airballed it, exactly. Like, it wasn't like it was close. It was a complete airball. I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. Because in my head, it's the same action, and I knew I could imagine it and visualize it. But obviously, I'm not an elite athlete. So when you put that to the very elite standards, that difference is only half a step.
See, I get the same when I swim. Like, I used to be, when I used to swim, I'd look through the land ropes and see someone, you know, some trundler in the mornings doing laps, and I'm like, I fucking got this guy.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, I don't.
No.
There's some 23-year-old who barely knows how to fucking stroke.
Yeah.
But he's got the gas tank of a young lad, and he's just powering through it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm done. I've done my 150.
But Apple is always good for that first, like, 3 to 5 steps. Yeah. It was so quick, and that's what broke open his play.
And his core as well, untackleable. Yeah.
But it seems like he doesn't have that. He still's got it, but it's not like it was anymore. It's only like half a second, half a step.
Well, it's that explosive energy.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't have that sheer explosion of power anymore.
But I don't think that it's a loss like he's done. It's just a readjustment of what you know you're capable of, and that's the maturity that comes with being that sort of elite player. And well, like, it's a Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan, he made those adjustments throughout his career. Still could dump 45 for Washington Wizards. So
yeah,
I don't think he's done. I think it's going to be off season of adjusting his game and playing a much more mature game and realizing that he can't do some of the things that he could do, but he still has other advantages that he can do through experience that he couldn't do when he was younger.
The thing is, I don't think he's the focal midfielder anymore, and he shouldn't be in that team. You've got Selwood, Dangerfield, and then up and comers Duncan, and you know, young Kelly's evolving into that.
Jack Stevens
and
Stephen.
And Kelly looks like the real deal. I mean, stick with him. So,
well, they've got to try. That's apparently he's a little bit keen on heading home. But
anyway, put him in the mid as a standard. And look, if you're Gary Ablett in the forward pocket, it'll be maybe a bit hard to take for the ego, but he'll still kick a fuck ton of goals.
But they all say, you know, whatever's best for the team. I'm like, the best for the team right now is you kicking 40, 45 goals a year for us.
Exactly. And I don't understand it. Like, I don't believe we'd be depressed about that. No. I think, like, forwards fucking love, midfielders love going forward kicking goals.
But how good would he be next to Tommy Hawkins, too?
Exactly. Yeah. Take some pressure off Tomahawk, because, I mean,
Tommy's going to make a contest every time.
And it doesn't matter how tall you are, you can cover Tomahawk. You have to be aware of where Ablett is at all times.
Yep. Absolutely.
And Ablett will let him be aware, too. He's like, oi, Tommy, run right. Let's be honest. Tommy Hawkins doesn't come across as a fucking genius.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, I don't know if all the doom and gloom about Geelong that's come out of this week. And don't get me wrong, enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yep.
But, you know, about how they fucked up. Because last year they finished second. Now, this year they had the best first-year player in Tim Kelly. He won that award through the Players Association or Coaches Association. They're the best second-year player in Stewart. They had, you know, Tommy Hawkins had nearly a career-best year. They added Ablett, and they've gone back 6 places and straight out. I don't think it's that bad, though. I think they were just a little bit unlucky and had, you know, down times when they didn't need to.
Well, I think, too, adding, like, when you mess with your engine, it takes a while to run it in.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't take a full fucking season.
Might have been a bit of laziness, too, you know. It's like, we've got Selwood, Dangerfield, Ablett. Don't worry about it. Go ahead. Do what you want.
And it might also, with those players who are looking to take the next step, it's almost... it's almost disrespectful to be too much competition against those guys. You know, you don't want to step on people's toes that much, but that's what you need in order to drive that competition internally to be a better team.
But
they're not a team.
Especially a bloke who's, you know, in the conversation of a best of all time and a legend at the club, generational legend at the club.
Yeah.
If you're the bloke that takes his spot, gets a bit sticky.
Well, you got to be better. I mean, you can't, like, this is, it's not about feelings. It's
I'm
about
saying players are.
This team. Yeah.
At the moment, there are players better than him in the midfield, and Duncan's one of them.
And what I found about this game most disappointing with Geelong was their inability to do one percenters, which would create space for the people who got the ball. Like, there's so many times they could have shepherded, given the ball carrier an extra second, 2 seconds to make a smart decision or free up a player. Mm. And they just didn't. They just watched him or asked for the ball in return. Yeah. And that killed them. They did it for the whole game. I'd love to see what those stats were for Shepherds, Smothers, things like that, which make big differences.
Yeah. Well, being at the game, I obviously don't have the replays to view.
Yeah.
But it seemed like, even though the free kicks were fairly even, it seemed like Geelong got the rubber, got a rough rubber the green a lot of the time. Because you'd see a mark taken, it's like, nah, in the back. And then you'd see a shot on goal about to happen, nah, that's taken off you. And it,
I don't know if it was rubber the green, but when I was watching, I thought, geez, there's some nice ones going Geelong's way. You know, the old high tackles and that kind of stuff. But it wasn't something I noticed on this day. But like you said, like they're having a shot on goal, and Selwood does something over on the boundary line.
Yep.
It's like, it was dickhead stuff.
Yeah.
And then top it off, you get people like Menzel, who decides to play on.
Was
it Hawkins shooting or was it someone else?
No, it might have been someone else, but it was 25 out dead in front and hits the post.
Yeah, and you're playing on and you dribble it and you hit the post. It's like, mate, if you're going to take that shot, you fucking put it through.
But even I'm pretty sure at one point Selwood got a free kick at centre half back or something like that. Might have got someone holding the ball. I can't remember if he went to him, passed it, or went to play on with a guy right there. They tackled him and just got holding the ball in reverse. They went back to kick the goal.
Yeah, I remember. He slipped a bit from memory.
That's right, he did too. He slipped over.
Yeah.
And then his argument was, oh, I was just sitting down to do my boot. Like, hang on.
He actually tried that one, did he? That was a nice one.
Yeah.
Also in this game, Paddy Dangerfield set a record for clangers in a final, which...
He did look off this game.
Yeah, his kicking was terrible.
Yeah. And always, I think maybe almost trying to do too much.
Well, he had to.
Yeah.
He had to because there was nobody else.
Yep. Can we blame Collective Minds for that too? Because he was from Adelaide?
You can try.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't there at the time, but fuck it. Throw it in there.
All right.
I want to throw a bone their way and find out something they did good. What was really positive out of Adelaide's season that Collective Minds could be responsible for?
I'll get back to you. No, sweet. It's going to take a while.
And on the flip side of this one, I thought this was probably the most important game that Jordan Lewis has played for Melbourne.
Yeah.
I thought he was one that really got them fired up. And not fired up in a way that made you nervous. Like they came out of the blocks roaring, ready to go, head full of steam. But on top of it, I felt like that had a lot to do with his attitude and his effort around the ground.
There was times where he had composure. He just had the ball and like, I'm just going to hit that target.
Yeah.
That one right there.
And that was never his job at Hawthorn, but he embraced that role.
A bit.
No, he shared that job at Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Now he's sort of owning it.
But I think too, in a team that has had not a lot of final success in recent memory, having a bloke say, lads, we got this.
Yeah.
It's okay. I know what success looks like. This is looking like
Before the game, they showed stats and they said, how many finals for each team? Melbourne had 26 finals and Jordan Lewis was 23 of them. So that tells you what they're doing there. All right. Anyway, the Ds should be happy and they'll go into next week as favourites. On to the Swans and the Giants. Again, very similar to the Friday night game. Where the Giants had all the ball and were just wasting it. At times, you thought they were trying to kick it to Alir.
Yeah, I wanted to get in this game, but as soon as Boomer Kelly was injured, I was like, geez, that's going to struggle for us next year.
Well, does it bring his price down?
Well, I hope so. I know the big talk's been about Shield leaving, but yeah, we'll get into that later. But geez, the Giants did look hungry.
And they
should have fucking annihilated them. What 10-19.
All their inclusions, all their injured players coming back in, they all played like blinders. I mean, Toby Green was probably second best on ground. There's more to talk about there. But I said guaranteed they'll have at least two on the bench injured by the last quarter. They had one. And Kelly, who would have picked that?
Paul Bassett. I mean, I don't know whether he's their highest priced player at the moment, but he's probably the one with the most... You could argue him on Shield as the most value externally.
Yeah,
used to be Kelly only because Shield's injuries.
Yeah.
But now Kelly's injured twice a season, right?
Something like that.
We'll fix him up.
But we'll talk about the good first with GWS. It's hard to pick who their best player was, either Toby Green.
Oh, Davis.
20-odd touches and 3 goals, or Phil Davis, who gave a fucking masterclass.
He gave Buddy an absolute bath.
He was in the right spot every time.
But also, one thing about Buddy, phenomenal talent. And, again, one of the people you talk about when you're talking all-time full forwards, he's the conversation piece. There's a few blokes up there who are legends in the game as well, he's someone who's in the conversation.
Well, I mean, I'm just happy that Brett Delaney can go to a reunion and talk about his finals win.
Yeah, fair call.
He looked a little bit apprehensive in the first quarter, but came good.
He was all right.
Yeah.
But... old mate Phil, buddy, gets a bit fragile if he doesn't come off to a good start, especially in the big games. And Phil leveraged on that quite dramatically and just read the ball a lot better. And they're kicking to him half the time, but still.
I got to say, his midfield helped him a lot, but there were a lot of one-on-ones where the ball was kicked in the middle and Phil Davis knew what to do, when to do it. I'm a little bit concerned. No, I'm not concerned, it's not the right word, but it's a little bit funny when they talk about, you know, Buddy's injuries and he's not 100%, and they bragged that he, you know, only trained 20 minutes for the season or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, he's not fucking right then. Why are you playing him?
Yeah, exactly.
He should have sat out, you know, rounds 19 through to 23, not, you know, two.
Exactly. Well, he sat out the first two quarters here.
Well, especially since Sydney haven't had a problem with other people chipping in to get goals. Yeah. Like, they've got a fucking killer midfield that are all outside goal-kicking range.
For now.
Do they? Do they have a killer midfield? I think that's part of their problem, is their midfield's a little bit stagnant.
Well, when it comes to kicking goals, I think running forward now, with actual midfield role, I mean, on paper, but, you know, paper doesn't tell the whole story and they're getting old. So it looks like it's a good one. Whether it performs, I mean, might be overshadowed by the capitulation of Geelong midfield.
Mm. Well, two late goals in junk time save Swans from one of the all-time embarrassers. As it stands, it's still their lowest score at the SCG.
Hmm.
Who would have thought the SCG was their trouble this year?
Yep, and you wait for him the whole game. You wait for him to come back. You're like, all right, is it going to come now? And not only did it not come, it didn't look like coming.
No. Well, I mean, one thing I'm famous for is bringing it in North Melbourne. But I was watching
shit bets.
That too. Sean Higgins was asked earlier in the week, who's the hardest player you know besides Ben Cunnington? Because you have to add that caveat. It's the same as with, you know, Chuck Norris and whatnot. And he said Callum Ward. And at the time, I was like, really? Watching this game, he was fucking right.
Yeah, wouldn't he?
Geez, that bloke's an engine.
Isn't he? Yeah, I got to say, he's a fucking star. He can do the thinking, too, for the young lads that run around him. I thought he was solid all day.
Well, he had 29 touches, 17 contested possessions.
Yeah.
And just, and by comparison, Caniglia is the next one with 13. And then you get Heaney with 11. Yeah. Just monstered them. It's almost pisses me off to see a player who can get that much hard ball and then dispose of it so well.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Toby Green with his kung fu fighting. It's been a big talking point for the last week. I don't get as passionate in trying to slag him off. I think, mate, just settle it down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a role for like a good heel in any sport.
Yeah,
and I feel like Toby is just embracing that heel role.
And he's come off, you know, after I think a month or 2 months off.
Yeah,
and he's turned in an effort like that.
Yeah,
but people are going to talk about his kung fu kicks.
Yeah, and see, you can be a complete wanker, but if you're good, then it doesn't matter. Oh, it does not matter.
Plenty of players have made careers out of being complete twats.
Yeah,
well, plenty more too. But look, it's one of those things where I'm not a fan of it, to be honest, but.
Oh, what he did was dirty and like...
Yeah, I'm not going to suspend the bloke for it.
It's one of those... It's like foot stomps in the UFC. Like, yeah, it's legal, but it's a cunt move.
Well, it's more like you're... There's a lot of players that put the foot out. I mean, Jared Waite was one, and Michael Long used to do it as well.
Yeah.
But he does more of a kicking motion.
Well, when it's below the shoulder,
yeah.
I think that's... It's easy to make a case for that. And when you're protecting the space, I think you're allowed to put your foot out and create space. That's fine. But it's when you've got it above your own head.
Yeah.
See, that's a little iffy. And then also when you're doing that kicking motion. I think AFL is different in that we make exceptions for shit that looks cool.
Yeah.
Like, you look at some of the most famous marks of all time, they were hands on the back, hands on the shoulders.
Yeah.
But it looked cool, so we're like, no, that was pretty good.
I feel like in this instance, I'm for the allowance of using your foot as a way to create space and a way to act as a barrier between you and the player. But it's hard to police it when you start saying it's allowed to be here but not up there because there's so many other variables. So I feel like it should almost be a gentleman's agreement between players that you just don't kick someone in the head.
It
shouldn't have to be legislated that you don't kick someone
in the head. Keep it below your own head. I think that's fair enough to say.
Just don't be a cunt about it. You know what I mean?
To be fair, there's quite a few players I think will struggle with that methodology, but...
Like Toby Green.
Green's being one,
one of them. Yeah.
But he can play.
Exactly.
And look, that's the end of it. Like, if he's on your... if he said tomorrow, I'm open to offers, probably 25 teams will be after him. And I think there'll be a few NFL teams in there. And
UFC.
Yeah. Probably Bayern Munich or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah, Boomers could use him, I think.
Especially when they're playing in the Philippines.
Yep.
Anyway, that was a great win there. GWS are 2-0 against Swans in finals now.
Wow. What was that? It was packed house.
It was at the SCG. SCG, yeah. I don't think it was that packed.
It wasn't that packed after halftime.
No.
There were a lot of it. I think it was also quite rainy early on.
Yeah.
Plus, NRL finals on, but it's Canterbury or...
There's West only Sydney teams left in the NRL now.
No, Storm.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Storm were in. Yeah, they had a cracking win against the Rabbitohs. That was awesome. I stopped watching the... what night was that on? What game?
Friday.
Was this game?
Yeah, it was on Friday night.
Because there was... For some reason, they decided to go straight up against AFL.
That's right, yeah, across the road.
To be honest, disappoints me, because you're missing out on probably 10,000 people who'd be like, I'm going to the AFL final, and then I'm going to fuck off to the rugby.
Exactly right.
40,000 at the SCG.
Not terrible.
Not too terrible. There's about four or five off capacity.
Yep.
But anyway, that's it for them. On to the final game, and easily the game of the round.
Oh, absolutely. West Coast Collingwood.
Almost feel sorry for Collingwood, because this game was played on their terms for most of the day.
Yep.
I still say best on ground, side bottom. I know there's a conversation to say for Yo and a few others.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, when everyone was spent, side bottom was too, and he was just still gut running.
How good was their midfield working, though? Oh,
yeah. Yep.
Now, Eagles had the better list, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's why they got up in the end. Their tall timber... Once they got going, they couldn't be stopped.
I mean, it took them a while, and I mean, Collingwood were never going to be able to cover all the tall firing power that West Coast have.
Yeah.
But they put in a fucking good effort, and it took a while for not McGovern, for Kennedy. to get kicking straight. Yeah. Which, I mean, it's always a hit or miss. He's either kicking, 11 goals one or one goal 11.
Yeah.
And how good was Tyson Goldsack?
Oh, amazing! Oh, amazing!
Brilliant.
Not just amazing, but to put him in, because he did his knee in March, this year, and to come back, he played in the VFL last week and got two kicks, but did all right, and they went, nah, we back him in. He's a fucking legend.
It's a good call by Buckley, and he has made brilliant. He has made just about all his decisions have been fantastic as a coach.
He's had a great year.
And look, at the start of the year, I was picking him as being first to be dropped, but right now he's in all Australian coach contention.
Yeah, and I always like seeing Collingwood lose, but I'm a fan of this team because they're young, they're exciting, they
don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but I felt like this game, what made me most happy was seeing Eddie Maguire's face when that free kick happens, and I kind of felt bad. I was like split because I want Collingwood to win, but that's almost worth it.
There was a couple of unlucky free kicks at the end going against Collingwood, but that's the game.
Collingwood do a right free kick, so that's just the rubber that goes.
But I thought they got some lucky ones early on too, but that's the way it goes. Collingwood could have won, I think, if they got just a little bit more out of Mason Cox and Jordan DeGoey. I thought he was just that little bit off DeGoey.
I didn't see shit out of Cox.
No.
I knew he was there and he was involved, but I don't think he took a contest to mark all night.
No, he didn't. But there was a lot of times you saw, because his job is really just to make a contest at Adelaide.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of times down the wing where they said, all right, let's kick it to Cox and we'll get it at his feet.
Yeah.
And the ball was falling about 10 metres short of him. Yep. So either the kicks weren't carrying or Cox is just really misreading it.
Yeah, and also one thing with Cox is that if he makes it so that the other team has to be accountable for him around the ground, it's very difficult to cover that and actually have a good counter attack strategy.
If he gets
strategy.
A run and leap at the ball, the only way you can beat him is by giving away a free kick.
Yeah.
He's just too big.
Yep.
I thought that was good body work by West Coast to make sure he couldn't get that run and leap.
Yeah. And Chalor, did he play in Resi's last week? We come straight into the A's.
Straight in.
Amazing game for someone coming... Yeah. Of that caliber and with that much expectation on him to come in and play like he did. I thought he was a standout considering the circumstances that he was in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the same with old mate Aish. Big fan of him. He's had a good run.
Him and Greenwood. Greenwood had a good game.
He did too. I'd love to pop both of those blokes. And I'm going to make a chance of doing it at some stage, I'm sure. Yeah. But they did well. Yeah. They did very, very well.
It's 24, I reckon, on top of my head. Ah, it might be 25.
Run with that.
Let's go 25.
Yeah.
I'm usually pretty good at guessing the players' ages, so I'll have a look at that in a minute. But end of the day, I mean, West Coast were the better side, and they're always going to come out on top, you felt.
Yeah, you did too. You never...
Actually, no, I disagree with that. I thought it was Collingwood's game, but at three-quarter time, they haven't buried him.
Exactly. They needed to really put the pressure on West Coast because that crowd can turn. And they are the 19th person, maybe the 20th sometimes. So if you can put that pressure on early, you get that crowd silence, and then they start turning on their own team. That's what you need, especially as Collingwood. So the inability to do that, I mean, it's high expectations, but that's what needs to happen if you're going to win over in West Coast.
Yeah, and sorry, Josh, you're just saying he's just turned 23, Aish, but yeah.
Right. He turned 23 in November.
Oh, there you go. Sorry, I read it wrong. Travis Farco. Now, everyone knows the kind of
story.
What he's had the last couple of weeks. Played like a fucking champion. I don't think I've seen him play a better game.
Yeah.
And slotted that goal from the boundary line too, which is probably maybe 2 metres inside the boundary from where Dusty kicked his on Thursday night.
Yep.
He looked free. He was running hard. I've not seen him play a better game.
I think it was the best possible therapy for a bloke like that.
Yeah.
Like one of those times where... And,
probably did want the game to end.
Well, it's one of those things where sometimes you need to get out of your own mentality in any sort of tragedy. And everyone goes through some shit.
And everybody knows, too.
Yeah.
Having said that, you'd be a son of a bitch if you tackled the bastard.
Yeah. And I think that every team wore two black armbands for Varko and for Sloan, right?
Rory Sloan, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was even that rundown tackle on Shuey right in the middle of the ground where you see Shuey's looked over his left shoulder and didn't know that Varko was over his right.
Yep. And those ones hurt.
Oh. And also, it was beautiful camera work because he tackled him. It's clearly holding the ball and Varko slid and just stood right up.
Yeah.
Give me the ball. Not going on with it, not trying to rub it into his face or push him on the ground, because what's the fucking point? Give me the ball, champ.
Yeah.
You've been weighed, measured, and found wanting. But Eagles, obviously just too good.
Yeah, but honestly, watching this, I didn't want this game to end. It was by far the best game of the round and the best final I can think of in recent memory, but I was 3 years deep, so my memory wasn't so great.
Since last year's Port versus West Coast.
Probably.
Yeah. All right, let's have a look at semi-final round next week. We've gone long on this one. That's great. Friday night, Hawthorn, Melbourne.
This is going to be fun, but Melbourne.
If they bring that intensity for four quarters, they can go all the way.
I don't think they're capable of bringing that intensity for four quarters, though. I don't think that's been the game plan all year. I don't think they're trained to do that. So I feel like this is going to be a war of attrition, and I think Hawks get over the line. I expect Melbourne to come out like they did against the fucking play?
Geelong.
And really put it to Hawthorn. And Hawthorn might be down by six goals into the second quarter, but I feel like they'll come back, and I think the Hawks get over the top.
I just think that with Viney, he'll be just as hungry because that's the bloke he is. And then you've got old mate Jones. He's going to be running around angry as hell. And then... Big Gorn, bodies. Who's going to be in the middle, giving them silver service.
Yep.
I just don't see where Hawthorn get their meanness from. Like, Sicily's a cunt, don't get me wrong.
From Jordan Lewis.
And Puopolo thinks he's 7 feet tall. And
he'll go someone.
He'll have a fair crack and fair play to him. He's an angry young man, and he earns every kick he gets. But I don't see them matching shoulder to shoulder with Melbourne's mids. I could be proven wrong, I just don't see it.
Especially with Gorn. And they're going to have to run Segler and McAvoy to try and wear him down.
But it's going to be a wet day as well, so I feel like that might take a little bit out of the sting of Melbourne being a clean and tall team and taking advantage of clearances. It's
funny, isn't it? Last week, I thought the wet would disadvantage Hawthorn. This week, I think it might not be too bad.
I think it's a better strategy for Hawthorn if it's wet. I feel like they can have a better counter-attacking game. I mean, it's always going to be tough against Tigers because of the small players and also the ability to get into the forward line. Where I feel like Hawthorn can, they can play a war of attrition against Melbourne.
I do think Hawthorn's slightly cleaner, though. And I say that solely because of Burgoyne.
Yeah, well, Burgoyne's played the worst game I've seen him play for 2 years.
Yep.
That won't happen twice.
Won't happen twice. It's easy to get caught up in the fairy tale that is Melbourne. Yep. If I were not a Hawthorn supporter, I'd be tipping Melbourne quite easily. On to Saturday, Collingwood and GWS.
I love this fucking match.
Again, it's a fucking cracker.
At the G as well.
Look, I almost bought tickets to this until I realised that I'd be surrounded by Collingwood supporters, and they decided not to.
They play great footy, and the
Giants... I'm a mistake. It's supposed to be sunny as fuck on Friday, to Saturday.
I was going to say, I didn't think it was raining, but...
Yeah, so this game's raining.
I saw you had the weather app up, and I thought, I'm not going to contradict you.
No, it meant to be a beautiful, fucking great night on Friday, so...
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Collingwood Giants, this could go either way. It's a tough one.
Oh, 100% go either way. It's gonna be really crazy shit.
Yeah,
because both teams play very fast, very free flowing, and they tend to run in packs. So it's gonna be who can do the best counter attack from halfback.
Well, how's this for the Giants? Obviously, Kelly's out.
Yep,
bring in Griffin.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
class.
You have to. Fuck you. Like when you lose a bloke who, you know, start of the season is in Brownlow conversation.
Yeah.
And you bring in a guy like Griffin.
He's got class. Yeah.
He's a quality player.
I think he's 30, 31. But Griffin and Ward together, they play very well. They complement each other's games a lot. And when you've still got Shield running around and Canelio.
Oh, Ward v. Sidebottom. Oh.
And Pendlebury's in there. You know, this is a great game. I think that...
Do you play Davis on Cox or do you play him loose?
No, I reckon you might play him on Stevens.
Yeah, I think so too, because I don't think...
Stevens and DeGoey when DeGoey rests forward.
Yeah, because Cox isn't a mobile forward, which is where Davis is, and he's an intercept mark as good as anyone in the league.
Really, you just need to body Cox, and I think they'll send somebody like Tomlinson his way.
Yeah.
And plus, he'll play further down the ground.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you have a... plan A, B, C, and Diva Cox with how well he's actually playing, how much attention you have to give him, especially in a wet weather game. And I think they'll have that sort of strategy set up. So for them, best case scenario is Cox doesn't do much, he's on the outer all the time, not up forward, and not doing much. That way they can be free to have their big players play pivotal roles as opposed to having to cover and sort of rotate through that roster.
If it's greasy, I don't see him taking that many contested marks.
No.
Which exactly. is what he's there for.
Yep.
And that might help the Lob v. Grundy matchup for the Giants as well.
Yeah.
Because Lob's got to be more accountable to Grundy, but high marking is his thing. If it's a bit greasy, you go, maybe your trick's out of the bag.
I'd say Lob's meaner than Grundy, but Grundy seems like a complete gentleman, to be fair.
He's just a nice guy. The Toby Green matchup's going to be trouble, I think. I don't know who's the obvious one. Like, Goldsack can go to him, but he might be too small and too fast.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think Goldsack goes to Cameron.
Yeah, again, he's got some pace, but Goldsack did the job on Kennedy last week, so you got to back him.
Yeah.
You've got to back him in. But he's going
to
need help.
If Patton was in the team, he'd go to that. He'd go to straight there. But
what about Majacek? Could he possibly play a joint role covering?
If Majacek goes more back, he's been playing forward in the last couple of weeks, but... They might need... we need more help in the back.
Someone younger that you can chuck on and just see how they go.
Yeah.
Again, for Green, they'll probably need plan A, B, and C as well, but it's going to be more important.
And it'll be a system that gets him. So who do you think is going to win? Giants or Collingwood?
I kind of want Collingwood to progress because I want to see how they go the further September goes.
Well, Collingwood-Richmond prelim.
I know, right? Yeah,
I want to see a Collingwood-Richmond final at some point in my life.
Buy shares in insurance companies because if you're on RACV shareholder list, that shit is going off. But I think the Giants. I know Kelly's a big out, but...
They can cover him.
They've got a fuck ton of stars.
It was a great game last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. Yep. And I'd want to see that again.
Yeah, I think Giants as well. I think they'll get there.
Who's the better chance to beat Richmond, do you think, out of these two? Because I think Giants are. Because Collingwood, they played near their best last week. I don't know how much more improvement they have.
I can make the argument for either, solely because if Richmond are vulnerable, it's in the ruck. And Grundy is probably
one of the better ones going around.
Yeah. I think Giants are a better matchup because they've got a strategy of their own game that's their peak strategy that actually is... a lot more different to Richmond's than what Collingwood is. So you're going to play a different style of game if it's on your terms than what the Richmond are, whereas Collingwood's a bit more closer to what Richmond will play. And so them playing their style of game won't be as disruptive to Richmond trying to get it on their terms.
All right, so we've got a couple of Giants and a Collingwood.
I think I'm going Giants.
Yeah, I did see Sheedy came out during the week and said, anyone who's not Collingwood, go for Giants.
Yeah, well,
I mean, he had a whole speech, but it pretty much comes down to
that's all you need.
Yeah.
Like there was four paragraphs of this shit. And it just pretty much comes down to fuck those guys.
And this is the gentleman's agreement as well. No one goes Collingwood unless you're a Collingwood supporter.
But I think he said they've had two premierships in 50 years, and that's enough.
Yeah. It's too many.
Yeah, I saw Joffa got into it too.
Good on him.
He gave a lot of people hell during the week, but it was also very appreciative of the Western Australian crowd of good banter, but nothing crossing the line. So
I saw those photos too when he was with some of the lads and taking pictures and everything. Yep. And I think that's the best part about it, the game, that you can go to the game and not get segregated.
Yep.
I know that was floated earlier in the year or something.
No, it wasn't.
But it was fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, that'll do us for this week. We covered off free agents last week, and I've got other shit to do.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, there were some more this week, but yeah, that'll be later on.
That'll be it.
Have a good one.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.